We're going to be looking at, again, the book of Revelation, and I pray that it will be an encouragement, because there is a word of exhortation and encouragement to those that will be going through this very difficult time. But also, we're going to learn something about this government that is going to be in place in that last day. And, I mean, we can see elements of it even in our day as it forms, you know, that's still future. Yet I find it a fascinating passage, and so may it be a blessing, may it be eye-opening as well. We are in the book of Revelation, so if you take your scriptures this morning and please turn to Revelation chapter 13 as we are going to be learning some things about what will take place in our future. I think sometimes we see the foreshadowings of these things actually being talked about and being planned. And so I find it a fascinating passage as we're going into it. We need to understand something about its context, though. As we are or have been going through the book of Revelation, we got to Revelation chapter 12, and this is where the world is at this point in time. The world, basically, half the world has been destroyed. Those that have survived this 3.5 years of war and famine and then pestilence that came upon and death, and then remember there are two, appears to be like meteor strikes that came and destroyed a third of the foliage and the grass and trees. And then months of unexplained pain that they went through, and then 1.5 years of just death from a plague. I mean, what a horrible 3.5 years as they entered into this time. And so John now is standing on the sands of the sea in his vision, and the world, and you have to understand, stunned world. Angry. I think most of the world will probably be angry. And then they're questioning. Why? You know, because they've rejected God, but they still, I've noticed, have you not noticed with the unredeemed often, you know, they have nothing to do with God, nothing to do with this church, nothing to do with anything. And then something happens and they say, why, God, are you doing this to me? Ever notice? And so angry. And imagine what has happened now to commerce. Global commerce with something like this is basically stalemated. We have a medical community that is, I mean, literally stretched beyond any kind of imagination. Local and national and even international government literally has come to a standstill, if not destroyed. We have the ecology and just environmental issues that are just out of control. And so we're talking about an infrastructure in the world that is just hanging by a thread. Things are in shambles. Everybody's looking for a solution. I mean, I would be. If I were in this, how are we going to pull ourselves out of this one? Anybody and everybody wants normalcy when this happens. And so as this unfolds, we find John standing by the sand of the sea. And let me read what he sees happen at this point in time. And I stood upon the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast rise up out of the sea, also a strange beast, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and upon his horns 10 crowns, and upon his head the name of blasphemy. Well, we need to drop down to verse 3, because there's one other interesting thing, because we need to grasp this so we can explain it. And I saw one of his heads. Remember, he had 7. And I saw one of his heads as it were wounded to death. And his deadly wound was healed. And all the world wondered after the beast. Well, this beast, you know, seems to be the one that the world is going to be turning to. This is the beast that they're going to say, it's going to rescue us from this dilemma we are in, because verse 4 tells us this, and they worshiped the dragon, they gave power unto the beast, and they worshiped the beast. So here we're finding the world that is going to be turning to the spirit entity behind this beast that is rising out of the sea, who is Satan. And they're yielding their lives to this satanically inspired leader, as well as to the government and his rule. Wow. What a frightening thing to see at this point in time. Well, we need to understand a couple more things so we can unlock all the things that we just saw in this passage. So I want you to turn, if you will, to Daniel chapter 7, the book of Daniel chapter 7. I'm taking you back 2,500 years in time, because Daniel was the one who actually told us and described many things that we are seeing here in the book of Revelation. 2,500 years before, he said, listen, these are some of the things that you are actually going to be seeing. He describes this beast that kind of rises out of the sea. And we'll be seeing here in Daniel 7, beginning in verse 7. Daniel, in his chapter here, he sees four beasts, the final one, this dreadful beast that comes out of the sea. Notice what he says here, beginning in verse 7. He says, I saw in the night vision, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible and strong exceedingly, and it had great iron teeth. It devoured and brake in pieces and stamped the residue with the feet of it. And it was diverse from all the beasts that were before it. And it had 10 horns. And I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them a little horn. Behold, whom there were three of the first horns plucked up by the roots. And behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man speaking great things. So Daniel, again, is the original source when we're talking about an anti-Christian or an anti-God leader that's going to be blasphemous in his kingdom. And he's the first one that begins to see these things. And in this is pictured a beast with 10 horns. And then there's a little horn that kind of comes up. Very interesting. We learned something about this little horn, because he had 10 horns, and this another horn kind of comes up amongst those horns. And this one is described as having eyes like the eyes of a man and a mouth speaking great things. So it's an individual that kind of rises up. We also can see here in Daniel chapter 7, verse 8, because it tells us something about this. He says, I considered the horns and them that were among them, that other little horn, behold, there were three of the first horns plucked up by the roots. In other words, he's going to, as he rises up amongst those 10 horns, he's going to literally destroy three of them. So literally this leader is going to be savage. He's going to destroy three other rulers as he rises to power. Verse 21 tells us another thing about him. He says, and I beheld, and the same horn made war with the saints and prevailed against them. So anybody that ascribes to God's name and to following him, he's going to make war against them. I want you to drop down to verse 23. Because we're going to find another thing that is described in this thing. He's going to be different from all the other kingdoms. Let me read. He says, the fourth beast shall be the fourth kingdom upon the earth, which shall be diverse from all kingdoms, and shall devour the whole earth. So when this one shows up, it's going to be a world global government. It's going to devour the whole earth, and shall tread it down and break in pieces. And the 10 horns of this kingdom are 10 kings. So we know that these horns now represent 10 kings that shall rise, and another shall rise after them, and he shall be diverse from the first, and he shall subdue three kings. So again, we find this 10 kings are going to be ruling this global world government. We're going to learn a little bit about it. One man is going to come up, subdue three of them, and he's going to kind of take over everything. In verse 25, again, it repeats it. It says this one is going to speak great things against God's people. Notice. And he shall speak great words against the Most High, and shall wear out the saints of the Most High, and shall think to change times and laws. You understand what's going to happen? He's going to change the way we see times. He's going to change the laws that are going to turn everything upside down. What we think is right side up, he's going to make upside down. And then he goes on, he says, and they shall be given into his hand until a times and a times and a dividing of times. In other words, a 3.5-year period. Well, we'll find that in Revelation, the same guy that he's talking about here. I know I've done Daniel chapter 9, because in Daniel chapter 9, this is the same guy that's going to go, and he's going to make a covenant with Israel and many. I want you to go to Daniel chapter 11, because we find him again as he's speaking here. In Daniel chapter 11, look at verse 36. It says, and the king shall do according to his will, and he shall exalt himself and magnify himself above every god. In other words, this guy is going to declare himself to be God, and shall speak marvelous things against the God of gods, and shall prosper until the indignation be accomplished, and that is determined shall be done. In other words, he's going to be ruling, and he's going to be declaring himself God until God comes and he judges. So we got a little snapshot of this one that is talked about here, where two things you'll see, a kingdom and an individual behind the kingdom. And so this beast, when we're seeing it, it is described as a kingdom rising up, and also you're going to see the spokesperson of this kingdom that's rising up, which is the Antichrist. And so with that in view, I want you to go back to Revelation chapter 13. Revelation chapter 13, as we will kind of unlock more of the details, and hopefully we'll be able to get a little better picture of what's happening here. I'll read this again, verse 1. It says, and I stood upon the sand of the sea and saw a great beast rise up out of the sea, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and upon his horns 10 crowns, and upon his head the name of blasphemies. Well, so to understand what we're talking about, you know, 10 heads, I mean 7 heads and 10 horns, and then these crowns that are on these horns. What? We got a little snapshot from the book of Daniel, but he tells us even more clearly when we go to Revelation chapter 17. So turn to Revelation chapter 17. Just look at verse 8, the last phrase in verse 8. It says a lot in verse 8, and we'll get to 17 at another time, but we need to just kind of pull out some details, help us to understand something about this beast that's rising up. This beast, it says here in the last phrase, when they behold the beast that was and is not and yet is. In other words, this beast was, existed, is not, seems as though it does not exist, but out of the ashes is. So you get a little picture of what he just talked about, this kingdom. So we're going to, some of that's going to kind of unfold as we see that he describes another thing about this beast, these heads. He describes this in verse 9. And here is the mind which hath wisdom. Okay, guys, so this is one of the keys, unlocks the door now. Here's the mind which hath wisdom. The 7 heads are 7 mountains on which the woman sitteth. Well, we can take literal mountains, and some have tried to make this literal mountains, and they look for places where there's 7 mountains. But I think we're going to find as we go through this passage, it clearly represents kingdoms. Each one of these heads represents different kingdoms here. Verse 10 kind of clears that up, because it says, and there are 7 kings, 5 are fallen, 1 is, and the other is not yet to come. And when he is come, he must continue a short space. So remember, this beast comes up, he has 7 heads. And he says, of those, 5 of those kingdoms have already fallen. They have already passed on the scene. In other words, there have been in John's day, as he looks back in history, there have been 5 global kingdoms that have tried to rule the world. And if you go back and you look at some of those, you would be able to say, well, of course, that's Egypt, and that's Assyria, and that's Babylon, and the Medo-Persian Empire, and the Grecian Empire. And so he says here, there are five that have fallen. There's one kingdom that still exists. Well, that's the Roman Empire. I mean, you know, John's living in the day of the Roman Empire. And then he goes on here in verse, he describes that there is also going to be something that's going to come. And so as he describes this one that is about to come, you know, which or is yet to come, that is the one that I think he sees coming out of the sea. So let me kind of, well, I think we need one more thing here. I think we need to go to verse 12. It says, "And the 10 horns which thou saw are 10 kings, which have received no kingdom as yet, but received power as kings 1 hour with the beast." So apparently, you know, these horns represent, you know, kingdoms. And so when we summarize this particular thing, we're looking in the latter day, there's going to be this global government that's going to take place. Remember, he's going to take over the whole world. And as this global government seems to rise, it's going to seem to be ruled by regions. 10 kings seem to be ruling, you know, the world. Now, I don't want you to think that nations have stopped existing. My personal opinion is you're going to still have nations, but there's still going to be regional people over those kingdoms, because it's not the first time that has happened. That's how Rome ruled. I want you to go back to the Roman rule in Jesus' day. And let's look at where Jesus lived. He lived in the area of Judea and in northern Israel and Syria, and those were countries. They had real boundaries in those days. And so in Judea, Pontius Pilate was a governor assigned by Rome to rule the Judean area. If you went to northern Israel and into Syria, King Herod Antipas was the one who ruled in that. And so they were like kings. In fact, there was a whole debate whether a king should have been over Judea, over Pontius Pilate. And because of all the conflicts that was going on, they decided not to give one of Herod's sons the rule in that area, and they gave it to Pontius Pilate. And yet they were considered kings. They ruled like kings, and yet they reported to the empire and to Rome. And I suspect it's going to be something like this. The world is going to be broken up where there's going to be regional powers that are going to be over those areas. And though there will be national boundaries, and you'll be able to say, well, there's Russia and there's Great Britain, there's whatever in this world, you will still see the regional ones over it. I want you to go back to Revelation chapter 13. Revelation chapter 13. A little more. We can learn about the kind of global government that is going to rise in that time. Because he says here in verse 2, he says, "The beast which I saw was like a leopard." Well, a leopard is a very swift beast. And so when this empire or this kingdom rises up, it is going to be able to strike and be very swift and quick in everything that it does. Its feet were as the feet of a bear. Well, you don't want to meet a bear, because they're powerful paws that can come and they can maul and they can stomp. I mean, I can remember a bear that came near our campground that picked up a cooler and with his paw, and then it started pounding the cooler and then smashing with his paw until the thing popped up. Well, I want you to imagine a kingdom that mauls and can crush and can rip open. And that's the idea of this kingdom. It's going to be very swift. It's going to be very, very violent and ruthless. It's going to have a mouth of a lion, because he talks about this here. And his mouth as the mouth of a lion. A lion roars. You know what the lion does, though? The male lion, it will go out and it will savagely kill a prey and lay it out and not eat it. And it was a warning. Don't mess, because that will be you. And it's very violent, and it would roar, And so the idea, it's a ravenous beast with creating fear and is loud, and that's the kind of government that is going to be rising in this particular time. And it tells us one last thing in this thing. It says, and the dragon, who is Satan, of course, gave him his power and his seat and great authority. And so this one will be satanically inspired kingdom that will rise up. One more thing is, as Daniel saw this passage, Daniel was looking forward into the future, was he not? And so Daniel was standing in the time of Babylon, and so he sees a lion, he sees the next kingdom, Medo-Persia, which is a bear, and he sees further up, he sees the Medo-Persian, the Grecian Empire rising up, which is the leopard, and then this dreadful beast coming, so he's looking into the future. John just does just the opposite. John is standing in his day, and he's looking to the past. And what does he see rise out of the sea here? He sees the beast, which is his kingdom at that time. And then he goes and he sees the next one that is in the past. And he sees that is the Grecian Empire and then the Medo-Persian Empire. It's very fascinating as he describes these beasts. Well, it's going to be a conglomerate of those empires, unique in itself, but it's going to be very satanic, very powerful, very ruthless. It's said to rise out of the sea. Well, at the time of John's vision, as I mentioned before, half the world has perished. You know, the global commerce has been disrupted. Medical community is crippled. The national and whatever governments are in chaos or broken. One-third of the world's ecology has been destroyed. The infrastructure is hanging in the balance. Everything's in shambles. It appears as though the government has died, failed. And then John sees here in Revelation chapter 13, verse 1, out of the ashes of all this destruction rises a fiercer, angrier beast than ever before. Hence, notice in verse 3 again, and I saw one of his heads as it were, what? Wounded. To death. In other words, I thought it's dead. And yet out of the ashes rises this more cruel beast than ever before that is going to now pounce and rule. And the people love it. They think this is the one that's going to save us. You know, so the question is now, and I can see perhaps on some of your faces here, who gets wounded? The kingdom or the Antichrist? Well, there are several views regarding this here, the deadly wound. I just presented the kingdom because it's right verses 1 through 4 seems to indicate it's a real kingdom, not a man. The man, he doesn't begin to speak where the him starts coming in verse 5. It says, and there was given unto him, where it becomes more specific, a mouth. Becomes the mouthpiece where the individual comes in. And so if the head represents the kingdom and then the 10 confederation of nations, they're going to experience this catastrophic event that's going to take place. It's going to cause this collapse, you know, economic disaster, political disaster, and so forth. And then miraculously, the thing is just going to be restored. View one, view two. Could be a person. You know, the Antichrist at some point in time is going to experience a fatal wound or something that's going to appear to be fatal, and then he's going to be resurrected, and the world is going to be in awe. And where they get that comes in probably around verse 11 and 12, because it speaks about the beast and it talks about him being elevated by the false prophet. Or it could be both. Because I find it very fascinating. There's one battle that is not mentioned in here in the book of Revelation, because it doesn't give us all the pieces here. But in the book of Daniel, chapter 11, it speaks of the king of the south, and it speaks of the king of the north. King of the north would be up in the Syrian area. The king of the south would be in the Egyptian area. And they come up and they try to kill the Antichrist because they don't want him to rule. And there's warfare that kind of explodes during that time. And apparently this is at the mid part of the tribulation period. And as a result of this, you know, of course, it looks like devastation to the empire and to the kingdom. But also some surmise that perhaps the Antichrist is wounded or at this period of time and then miraculously rises up. When we're in heaven and we're watching, we'll know. But I want you to understand, these are the sequences that are alive during this particular period of time. The world, verse 4, tells us this. And they, the world, worshiped the dragon and gave power unto the beast. And they worshiped the beast, saying, who is like unto the beast? Who is able to make war with him? Because they're just stunned by this event that just took place. It seems though everything is done. And then all of a sudden, out of the ashes rises up this one that is able to do this. And so they worship publicly Satan. Now, I pause here just for a minute, because as I think about it, can you imagine the world just going after Satan? Until something just recently happened. In our day, there is a contracted company to Nike sneakers. Nike contracts out to different manufacturers to actually produce their sneakers, and one of the ones is MSCHF. And I think, man, that's a mouthful to say. I work for MSCHF. Well, those are the consonants to the word mischief. And the company's name is Mischief, if you were to pronounce it. And they like to produce mischief. And they actually modified the Nike Air Max sneaker, which goes for $100, and they were selling it for $1,000+. And they called it Satan's Shoes. And it was red. It contained in the bubble in the sole a drop of human blood from one of their employees and mixed with ink. And it had on the side of it the scripture passage, Luke 10, verse 18, where Satan, like lightning, falls from heaven to the earth. And they only produced 666 of those sneakers. And when they put it on the market, it sold all of them in 1 minute. Today, if you wanted to buy size 8 sneaker of that, it's $15,000 to buy that. You can buy it on eBay. It is also promoted, one of their, it is a rap star that does not connect with adults, does not connect with teens, does not connect with young adults. He connects with grammar school kids. He is the raging star with all the grammar school kids, and he is promoted holding the sneaker, Satan's sneakers, so that you need to have stuff like this. And this, now Nike sued this group who did this, but this is the second time this group has done it, because they made prior to that the Jesus sneaker with holy water in it. And so, but understand, the world is topsy-turvy and upside down. And so we can see here a whole world that has been devastated and thinking God is angry and they can't understand it. They reject him and they see their salvation is Satan. And they're the ones that are turning. And this Antichrist, when he rises up, notice what he will do here in verse 5. He says, and there was given unto him a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies. And power was given unto him to continue 42 months. And so his character that is going to be an evil character. And the thing that as he rises from the ashes, he has nothing but obscenities to say against God. Not only that, he verse 6 gives us a little bit more. He says, and he opened his mouth in blasphemies against God to blaspheme his name and his tabernacle and them that dwell in heaven. And so here he has nothing good to say, and he is angry and vicious and out to kill. In fact, in Revelation chapter 12, verse 12, it's Satan was cast out of heaven in that passage, and it says because he there was great wrath because he knows that he hath but a short time. And so this one is going to be vicious beyond any imagination as he ravages the world. I find it fascinating that one of the key terms, and I always look for terms when I go through a passage that shows up all the time, over and over and over again, is blasphemy. You'll find it in verse 1, you'll find it in verse 5, you'll find it in verse 6. You know, and this one is this blasphemous, and he's going to blaspheme God, and he's so angry at him, and the world is angry at God, and they want nothing to do with them. We're going to find next week, you know, the people are actually going to start worshiping him, and that's where they're going to take the mark. You know, as they identify with this anti-Christian leader in this government in which they decide to worship and follow. Well, verse 7. And it was given unto him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. And the power was given unto all kindred and tongues and nations. In other words, he's going to rule the world. And anybody that has any inkling toward God, you're dead. That's it. Verse 8 says, and all that dwell upon the earth shall worship him. That's what it's going to be, a global worship of Satan and his kingdom, whose names are not written in the book of life of the land slain from the foundation of the world. In other words, the world is just going to turn almost in its entirety against him. And listen, to survive in that time for a believer would just be really impossible. Because notice 9 and 10. He says, if any man hear, have ear, let him hear. Here's the warning. Any man have ear, let him hear. He that leadeth, now this is a warning to the world. This is a warning to Satan's kingdom. He that leadeth into captivity shall go into captivity. Listen, if you turn in one of these saints and you into captivity, I'll guarantee you'll be in captivity, but the captivity will be eternal captivity. He that killeth with a sword must be killed with a sword. And then he says this to the believers. Here is the patience and faith of the saints. Folks, the idea is this. If you follow the Lord Jesus Christ in those days, you'll most likely be killed. It's going to cost you everything. They'll hunt you down. They'll capture you. And they'll kill you. However, you will have the promise of eternal life. And he says, listen, I want to tell you, be patient, because my wrath is against all this, and I will win in the end. And then he warns the world that has turned their back and is going to be contemplating, should I get the mark or should I not get the mark? And those that get the mark will be sealed. He says, and you lead those into captivity, you'll be led into eternal captivity. You lead the, you kill them, you'll be killed. You'll have eternal death. Because the one who's coming back, the Lord Jesus Christ, is going to rule and reign. He's going to take up his residence on earth. And he's going to take his rightful place. And he's going to destroy all those who hold against him. Wow. What a passage. This just talks about the one that rises out of the sea. Next week, we're going to see the one that rises out of the land. I think this one's bad. We'll learn a little bit more about what's going to be happening during that time of government. Why don't we close this time here with a word of prayer? Our Heavenly Father, I thank you.